Jake Keeler joins me this week to discuss the state of U.S. homebrewing. This is Beersmith Podcast number 179.
This is the Beersmith Home Brewing Show, where brewing great beer is our passion. If you want to take your brewing to the next level, visit beersmith.com, where you can download a trial version of our Beersmith software, subscribe to the newsletter, and get dozens of free articles on home brewing. And now, your host and the author of Home Brewing with Beersmith, Brad Smith.
Today on the show, I welcome Jake Keeler. Jake is a former AHA Governing Committee member and former Brewers Association board member. He also works for BSG, which is a major brewing supply group. Jake is actively involved with the industry committee. In fact, he's the chair now, and he joins us to discuss the state of homebrewing. Jake, it's great to have you back on the show.
It's great to be here, Brad. Thanks for having me.
So how have you been? How have you been doing lately?
Good. Things have been going really well. Things are extremely busy at work. We're seeing a healthy industry, not only in craft brewing, but also in wine, in craft distilling, and even in home brewing. We're seeing it start to pick back up. So things have been busy at work, and life is good, so couldn't be happier.
And today we're going to discuss the State of Homebrewing Industry annual survey. Can you tell us a little bit about the survey?
Yeah, sure. So I can't remember the specific year we started doing the annual survey, but it's got to be 6 or 7 years at least, maybe longer. And it was kind of a desire for not only the AHA, but the industry, retailers in particular, to get a gauge on where things were at with growth numbers, with the health of the industry, with trends. And so that survey will go out to as many retailers as possible. So the AHA will send that out. And then also the people that are involved on the industry subcommittee will use their networks, whether that's as manufacturers or distributors, to get it to their retail networks. And we try to get as many retailers to participate as possible and answer these questions. The results are anonymous. So when they're shared back with the membership and those in the industry, you know, there's no names attached. But it really just gives everybody an idea of, you know, just exactly what it is, the state of the industry, you know, where the growth is at, where the declines are, what kind of trends are going on in shops, whether that's with particular types of ingredients or brewing methods. And it also factors in home winemaking as well.
So what kinds of questions would be on the survey if I received one here?
Yeah, sure. So it used to be a lot larger in scope, and we've narrowed it down over the years as we've gotten feedback from retailers as to what they thought was relevant and, you know, was most important. So it may cover topics everywhere from the average square footage of a retail shop and trying to gauge how much do they dedicate to education, how much do they dedicate to certain product lines. And really, that's to give other shops an idea of how a typical homebrew shop is set up. Then it goes into obviously revenue figures, gross margin figures, looking for percentages. Again, these results are kept anonymous by the AHA, so you know no one's really outing themselves or whatnot. And then it's specific questions, usually about product lines. You know, have you sold more starter kits than you did last year? How many more? Have you sold more extract than you did last year? How many? Talking about beer kits, wine kits, things of that nature. And then it does dive into some other topics like where do you put your marketing dollars? What are the most important channels? How much time do you dedicate to education? How many times are your customers coming in? So we're looking at frequency. And then you know, a lot of questions around demographics, customer demographics. Who's coming into your shop? Age range, gender, things like that.
Well, can you give us a few highlights from this year's survey, or last year's survey, I should say?
Yeah, just to give a little context to listeners, you know, over the past few years, some of the trends we've been seeing are continuing to show up. Those would be, you know, a decline in extract sales. We've probably seen that for about 5 years now. We've seen a slight decline in starter kits. the 5 gallon starter kits, I think that most people are familiar with, mm-hmm. that have been sort of a staple of shops over the last 20 years or so. We've seen a increase in people going straight to all grain brewing. So, and that can be seen by equipment purchases, brewing preferences of your customers, the uptick of ingredients. So we're seeing a shift in all grain brewing, which correlates with a drop in extract and a drop in the starter kits, because if you have more people going straight to all grain, they're skipping those extract beer kits, and they're typically skipping that starter kit as well when they first come in. We've seen wine making hold steady a little bit more so than beer making, which really points to the demographic and the reasonings behind making wine versus beer. We have seen the sharpest declines in sales are really coming from the shops that are 5 years or older and do less than 70% of their business online. So that's not a surprise. The businesses that are a little bit younger are faring better. So we actually do see a lot of growth, some in the double digits for shops that have been open 3 to 5 years, and that's encouraging to see. And we also see a better success rate with shops that are doing a good portion, if not a majority, of their business online. So I think that shouldn't really come to us as a surprise as we look at macro trends with Amazon and other online e-commerce shopping consumer trends. Homebrewing kind of follows suit with that. Those are some of the highlights. We are seeing some declines that we had seen over the last 4 or 5 years starting to stabilize. We're either seeing that they're coming in flat, or even in some cases areas and signs of growth.
So let's discuss some of these one by one, but let's start with a long-term trend, which is the continued Sure. decline in sales. We've seen a decline in sales. I think it started around 2014. Is that roughly right?
Yep.
So
yep,
exactly. almost four years now, right?
Right. And there's a couple of things to help shape that view, right? A context to it. I think as an industry and as a hobby, we saw explosive growth in 2008 through 2013 or so.
Wasn't it growing about 20% a year or something like that?
Yeah, it was amazing. Lots of new shops coming online, lots of business, a lot of casual homebrewers. So a lot of people just getting into it, giving it a try. And a lot of people, there was during the great recession, and they had more time on their hands. They were looking for ways to save a little money. Homebrewing kind of exploded. We always show this graph, Dr. Bart Watson of the BA always shows this graph when we do the presentation at HomebrewCon, a correlation between Google searches for homebrewing and white male unemployment rate. And they are exactly the same. They're right up. So there's a direct, we kind of like to say, well, when people are unemployed and they've got time in their hands, homebrewing becomes a more popular hobby. And so as we come out of that great recession and the economy recoveries, people have more money in their pocket. They've got more disposable income. They've typically got less time on their hands because they're working now. And we have a rise in craft beer, with tap rooms becoming sort of a ubiquitous thing, even in small towns. So you kind of put those combination of factors together and you can see where homebrewing starts to kind of drop off. But I like to think of that long-term trend of declines as more of a correction to the hobby. I think what we were seeing during those explosive years with the double-digit growth was a little abnormal. It was kind of a perfect storm of conditions. But I'm not sure we will see it again. We might, things might align, but getting back to a more modest level of growth where we're talking about, single digit, maybe if we're talking double digits, 10 to 11% in some years, and a fewer number of shops. So there was kind of an oversaturation of shops. There was probably more shops than there were homebrewers to serve, right? And now we're seeing sort of a correction to that, where we're getting back to a more reasonable level where shops are more successful. There's sort of a survival of the fittest, if you will. The shops that are investing in their education, their marketing, quality of their products, freshness of their ingredients, they're doing great. They're doing fine. They're finding ways to generate growth and stay in business.
So it lasted 3 or 4 years roughly so far. What was the overall decline? I'm trying to remember the industry as a whole declined, what, 4 or 5% a year or something like that?
Yeah, we were looking at, it started off as kind of a flattening. Then it was like a 1%. Then it was 3, 5, and it just kind of kept going. And this last year, we try to look at it now, not as necessarily a whole. On the whole, it's maybe down 1% or so, but in certain areas, it's starting to even out. And in other areas, we're starting to see some growth again. So again, it's we used to look at the industry, I think, in a, just a very homogenous way and just say that all shops were equal and operated the same way. Now, I think there's a consensus or an acceptance that there's a huge disparity between shops, some shops over here and over there. The way they operate, their route to doing business, their connection to their customers, their geographic footprint, so it's almost like if you look at the BA's data, they don't compare, they break it out into barrel production, they break it out to state, they break it out to, self-distribution versus, working through a three-tier system, and I think that the homebrewing industry is much smaller. But you do have to look at it in those little pockets to get a better understanding of what's going on.
Well, let's talk about some of those differences. I know a lot of the smaller homebrew shops were hit much harder in general than the large ones that, do a large business online, for example, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So the data all shows that the shops, again, that 5 years plus and doing less than 70% of their business online were the ones that were seeing the most declines. And, I kind of like to couch that in, think of the shop that opened in the late 70s or 80s and, really hasn't made too many changes to the product mix that they sell, hasn't really stayed on top of, keeping the best ingredients and keeping things fresh and relevant, hasn't brought in the new exciting equipment. At some point a homebrewer is going to say, well, I've been seeing all this stuff and I'm getting excited, but I come to your shop and I can't get what I need. I can't put my recipe together or I can't find the equipment. And then they go online and they can find, someone like Northern Brewer or More Beer or Ventures in Home Brewing and a list of others that have great selections of equipment, great selections of ingredients, and can get it to their doorstep by next weekend. So, this is not unique to home brewing. This is every retailer's dilemma at the moment.
Now, this is kind of the Amazon effect, right? Everybody buys everything from Amazon, it seems like now, right?
Absolutely. And you can think of the Amazon effect as something that was already happening in home brewing. People were already going online and using that as their sort of standard, right? That was a litmus test. Like, if you don't have what they have online, then why am I going to the shop? So shops figured that out. And the good shops offer, a wide range of good equipment. They offer fresh and diverse ingredients. And they offer something that the online shops can't sometimes offer, which is education, face-to-face interaction, having a person to talk to work through a recipe formulation, or maybe they'll try your homebrew and give you some tasting notes and some feedback. The good shops kind of figured that out. And those are the ones that are doing well.
So it's a very diverse environment, right? There's a lot of different things going on, really, between different shops, right? And of course,
absolutely.
I haven't mentioned it yet, but we have seen a decline as well, right, in terms of the number of shops, right?
Yeah, we do. We've seen a steady decline in the number of shops, probably for about the last 3 years. nothing too dramatic, but I think that might be a good thing. You're spreading I like to think that there is, at the moment, there's always going to be a finite amount of homebrewers in the U.S. or in the world, if you will. Not everybody's going to do it. So at some point, you're going to reach a ceiling and a saturation point within a given community. So, is there enough to go around? And that's going to be different from community to community. And obviously, the macro factors of something like a recession or something similar can have a major impact on that as well.
Now, interestingly, we had another big decline back around 2000, which is sort of sort of interesting because it wasn't a countercyclical decline. It was the same time the stock market crashed back in 2000, I think, right? But but homebrewing was taken off at the end of the 90s. I remember just vividly how it was exploding, and then it did have a multi-year decline there right around 2000, 1999, 2000 timeframe.
Yeah, I remember reading an article from it was either 98 or 99, and it was right before you saw this decline in the industry and before you saw this kind of a shedding of a lot of shops, but there was something like the AHA had something like it was almost near 900 shops in the U.S. And that was actually when I was reading that was more than the number of shops we had at the time. And I think this was back in 2013, 2014 when we started to see those declines. And I was like, we had more shops back in 98, of course this was going to happen. If we couldn't support, 900 shops back then, I don't know that we can support 900 shops now. I think it's just like any other industry.
It goes in cycles, right?
Exactly. It's a hobby, so it's inherently going to go in cycles in the mainstream interest in it or people's adoption of the hobby itself. And stores, retailers in general, are always going to have to evolve. They're always going to have to adapt to those changing dynamics. And if they don't, they are susceptible to suffering or being the largest, casualties within the any declines or peaks and valleys within the hobby.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about some of the other long-term trends. You mentioned the move by homebrewers from malt extract to all grain, and I can't remember if it was last year or the year before. We actually, I think, finally passed the threshold where we have more all grain brewers than extract brewers, which wasn't the case for going all the way back to the '80s, right?
Yeah. I think that's one of the most, to me, that's one of the most fascinating things about the homebrew industry, hobby, community, in totality. It's really interesting to see, to me, sort of the fruits of everyone's labors over the last 10 to 15 years, yourself with offering, brewers this robust and powerful software to power what they're doing and to inform them and to, make them better homebrewers. And then all the educational materials that have been produced in the last 10 years, whether that's, the multitude of books that have been published, or maybe more importantly, the amount of video content and digital content that's been spread on the internet, whether that's through, e-commerce providers or podcasts or just on YouTube by just your average home brewer. There's so much more education out there now than there was, 5 years, 10 years, 15, 20 years. So in a way, the industry is sort of a victim of its own success. The more that they've educated the home brewer, the more that they've put these materials out there, you can see that, then people come into the hobby and they say, well, okay, I've seen this video. I've read this book. All grain brewing doesn't look that hard. I think I can do this. Whereas previously they'd be, oh, that just sounds really difficult. I'm going to stick with this extract. I'm going to get the starter kit. That is, but I think in general, there's so much education out there now, quality education, that it makes that barrier to entry so much lower. I also think that, people are just far more comfortable researching topics and how-to videos online than they used to be, right? When I had to, install a new toilet, what's the first thing I did? I went to YouTube, and watched a video on how to do it. And I was like, okay. Went and bought the things I needed and installed the toilet.
Yeah, I had to patch a leak in my basement. I did the same thing,
Yeah. Oh. And, that didn't exist, not in earnest 10 years ago, certainly not 20 years ago.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. For the longest time, about 75% of homebrewers were extract brewers, and it was the minority that were all grain. And as I mentioned, I think it was a year or two ago, we passed the limit, and now the majority are all grain. So,
yeah. And I think two other factors into that, one, availability of the ingredients, the variety of malt and grain and adjuncts that you can get is just astounding. hops, whatever. I mean, if you want to get your hands on it, homebrewers can do it. And that's amazing. That's fantastic. The other would be just the brewing equipment. The innovations over the last 5 to 10 years have been amazing, particularly electric brew systems, you know, where, okay, you no longer need propane. Well, now you can move it into your basement. Now you can, you know, reduce the amount of space that you need. It's really making, again, it's lowering that barrier of entry for more advanced brewing techniques, and All Green being one of those, obviously.
And for the folks that are passionate about it, I mean, you can essentially get professional level equipment on a homebrew scale now. You can get stainless steel fermenters, stainless, you know, everything. Pretty amazing, really.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, these, you know, coming out with glycol chiller units for, you know, 5 to 10 gallon conical fermenters. I mean, it's a pretty cool time. I think it's super exciting. And, you know, my message is always kind of like, if you've gone out of the hobby, and you know, you come back in, it would be a really, it'd be really interesting, you know, to see like, wow, all this stuff now exists and all these new toys to play with.
Yeah. Well, another long-term trend is the decline of beginner kits, which is kind of interesting. And the question I had for you, are there fewer people entering the hobby now, or are they just coming in at a more sophisticated level?
Yeah. And that's a fantastic question. That is a question that, honestly, the AHA and those of us in the industry and on the committee and whatnot have kind of struggled to find a accurate answer to. You know, you can look at the trends and you can look at the data from the survey, and obviously the beginner kits are going down. So you could take that as to mean that we're having fewer entrants into the hobby. But I would challenge that assumption simply because we are seeing an increase in all grain brewing. If you're all grain brewing, you're not buying that starter kit anymore, right? You don't need the bucket. You don't need a lot of that equipment. You're going to go straight to, you know, a different type of brew system,
yeah,
essentially.
Maybe a simple brew in a bag system or something like that, right?
Right. Right. So you might do brew in a bag, or you might do a 1 gallon all grain kit. There's a lot of those now available. You can get those at big box stores. You can even get that at a Barnes and Noble now. You know, typically around the holiday season. So I think there's still a lot of people getting into the hobby. They're just getting into it in a different way. There's a different route that they're taking. And that route doesn't necessarily go through the homebrew shop. And it doesn't result in the typical purchases that we had seen in the past. So I don't take the decline in the starter kit sales as a you know, like a canary in the coal mine type of situation. I take it more as an indication that people are changing their brewing preferences and they're changing the way that they get into the hobby itself.
You know, I didn't get a chance to ask this, but I know you track some age demographics. Have they changed over the years? Have we seen an aging of the home brewing population, or has it been robust?
Absolutely. There have been some shifts in that. We are seeing the baby boomer generation is going to, or already has, you know, entered into a retirement segment. And that, you know, you could look at that as a potential, if they're already homebrewers, they may be homebrewing more because they'll have more time on their hands, or that's a potential new homebrewer. And I don't think shops are typically thinking that they're going to target that demographic. But I think it's an opportunity because these people are looking for, you know, ways to pass their time. And a lot of these people appreciate a good craft beer and they appreciate the, you know, they making things. So that's an opportunity. And then we're also seeing the younger generation, the millennials and the generation after, starting to get into the hobby and, you know, trying to determine, well, what's the message for them, you know, and the, you know, it used to be 30s and 40s. That was kind of the sweet spot. 30 to 40 year old white male. That was kind of the sweet spot for this shop. I don't know if that's going to continue. I think that shops need to absolutely, you know, look at how they can diversify their offerings to broaden that the ethnicity that's walking into their store and who they're catering to and who they're serving. And I also think gender wise, there's a massive opportunity to get more women into home brewing. It's a little bit of a hidden statistic because it always shows up and it's usually about the same amount of, you know, reported in the survey. But we also get a lot of reports that a lot of couples brew together, but we're only getting, you know, maybe the data that, you know, the husband was reporting on it, or one end of the spouse. So I think there's a lot of opportunity there. And again, this all goes back to what a particular retailer or shop is willing to do, you know, what their comfort level is, who they want to target, and finding ways to cater to these people and make them feel welcomed. You know, it used to be you'd go into a homebrew shop and it just looked like some dirty, dusty hardware store. I don't think that works anymore, because I don't even want to go into a dirty, dusty hardware store. I want to go into a place that I get excited about. You know, they've got some cool equipment. They've got some knowledgeable staff. They've got some good music playing. It's got a good vibe to it. All of a sudden, I'm thinking, yeah, this is something I can get into.
Yeah. Well, on the good news side, the overall decline last year was less than 1%, I believe. So what do you think? Where do you think is coming next? Are we going to see a turnaround here shortly?
I do. I think we'll probably have another year of, you know, I'd like to see it not be a decline. I'd like to see it, you know, maybe holding even. I think it's going to be somewhere between a negative 1 or a 1%, something that's just going to, you know, another year of things stabilizing, maybe a few more shops dropping off the map, maybe some, you know, continuation of the trends we're seeing where a decline in extract, but a rise in all grain. But I do think there's some key areas for growth. And one, I think that, you know, online sales, that's an area to grow where shops can have some more success. I do think that extract could have a bounce back into popularity. You know, we have an industry, I've kind of talked about this, and, you know, no one's really pushing that right now. Everybody's just sort of saying, well, all grain is where it's at, so that's what we're going to go with. But I, you know, there's a huge benefit to extract brewing, the ease of use, the reduction of the hours that are needed to create a, you know, a 5-gallon batch of wort. You know, and so I think that there's an opportunity there to bring that back with maybe some high quality ingredients, great recipes, and just some, you know, promotion and push of extract brewing. You know, Charlie Papazian talked about at this keynote at HomebrewCon about still making, you know, extract beers, and he thought they were fantastic. And I think we just need more of that to remind people that that's a valid brewing technique that can produce some really good homebrew. Because again, maybe you don't have a 5-hour day on or a 5-hour session on a Saturday, but you've got 3 hours.
You got a few hours, right? Exactly.
Fair. Yeah. Well, maybe a little crap.
Yeah. Well, that brings me to my, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I think we'll see continued innovation in equipment as well. I think, like you said, I think the equipment is just going to become more and more professional scale, easy to use, designed at, you know, accommodating someone with the smallest space, right? So that, you know, somebody could really get dialed in, but not have to dedicate an entire garage or basement to do it.
Sort of playing off your question on, or your comments on extract kits. I noticed you also collect data on winemaking kits, which they sell. Have you seen any trends mm-hmm. there? And of course, most winemakers are kit makers, right? Or make it from kits, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The majority of winemakers in the U.S., hobby winemakers are making from kits. If you're on the West Coast, you might have access to, you know, grapes and maybe as a group buy or to a retailer or being able to buy directly from a vineyard. So you might do it on a scale that's much larger. But most winemakers are going to be making wine from kits. And, you know, wine kits are holding pretty steady. There's some declines in areas and there's growth in others. Definitely, you know, your fruit wines and your all year round wines and sort of like your, you know, wines that you might find in the southeast of the U.S., those are going to do well all year. They always do well. And then sort of your premium wines and then the wines that are built off of, you know, just wine drinking trends in general, those are doing well. You know, the winemaker typically is a, you know, there are a lot of people that get into it for the technique and for the craft, but a lot of winemakers are making wine for, to just have wine on hand in their cellar. So they're a bit more, sustenance, creators. So they may have a kit, two or three different, you know, styles that they like. Maybe they've got a few kits that they really like, and they'll just keep making those. And they'll make X amount a year, and that's what they do. You know, they're not looking to expand it. They're not looking to necessarily improve their knowledge. It's really about just having wine on hand so they can have a glass of wine with dinner, you know, a couple times a week. I think homebrewers tend to be a little bit different. Yes, there is a sustenance component to it, but I think they tend to be a bit more adventurous, and you know, they want to learn how to make different types of beers. They want to explore different flavor profiles. They get into the history of the style. You know, so it's a little bit. There's a little a couple different drivers there to those two components of home fermentation. And of course, a lot of homebrewers do both, right? So,
yeah, I mean, I got into winemaking when I was adding the mead, wine, and cider features for Beersmith. And it's been great because, you know, it kind of all those things, mead, wine, and cider are things you can do with your existing homebrew equipment. And honestly, they're less effort than making a batch of beer. And it adds some variety and spice to the place. You know, because somebody comes over, you can offer them a homemade wine or homemade mead instead of just, you know, instead of just beer.
Yeah, and I should have mentioned in terms of growth and trends, cider has been on the rise.
Cider's huge. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, it's been huge and really interesting. I think people are getting really creative with it, whether they're making it from kits or I think a lot of homebrewers tend to source their own apples if they're in an area where they can get that. So that's an area, and I think mead is kind of in the same area. It's smaller, but again. You know, as we see a diversification in beverage consumption in general by consumers that are, you know, a lot of people are moving to spirits and to wine at the moment, then your homebrew trends are going to follow those same macro trends.
Well, what are some of the other takeaways from the survey? Maybe a couple, have you got any major points we didn't cover yet?
Not really. I always, you know, I guess one of the things I always state at, HomebrewCon, and as I talk to retailers and industry people, is, you know, you always have to take these numbers with a grain of salt. The survey is only as good as the data that we collect, and we could always get more information from a larger group of retailers. I think it's a big enough data set to take at face value, but I always, you know, there's always gaps. You know, the AHA doesn't collect data from companies like Amazon or some of the larger big box retailers. So, you know, there's when you try to consider that, you say, well, how much is being sold via Amazon? How many homebrewers are getting in through that channel that aren't going through the homebrew shops and therefore are not recorded? So, you know, it's a good, you know, kind of like lick your finger and put it and see where the wind is going, but it's definitely not the last word on where things are at.
Yeah, I mean, if you're excluding Amazon sales, that's got to be a little, you know, some equipment certainly is being bought there, probably even some ingredients.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's I think it's you know, I try not to be too you know, try to couch it in terms of, you know, it may be like one of the larger online retailers equivalency. I don't think they're doing anything abnormally large. So it's a missing piece of data. How much it would move the needle, I'm not sure.
Yeah, and of course, most people selling on Amazon are probably homebrew equipment suppliers anyways, right? So, I mean, it's not something Amazon, I don't think they stock a lot of homebrew equipment on their own. Most of it's being resold through a third party, right?
Correct.
Okay. Well, if we're done with the homebrew survey, let's move on to, there's one other topic you want to discuss, which is making homebrew fun. And what do you mean by that? How do you start with that?
Well, this was, honestly, it's probably somewhat a result of going into the state of the industry talk for the past 4 or 5 years and having to say, well, we're seeing declines. Here are some things we can talk about. And really, you know, the industry in general just really hyper-focused on how do you generate growth? How do we recoup some of these costs? How do we get people back into the hobby?
I just want to mention, you're also involved in that because you work for BSG, one of the major wholesalers, right? So, I correct. Mean, you're, yeah, this is so your this business is, every day, right?
Absolutely. This is part of my day job, is part of the stuff I think about on a day-to-day basis. You know, and so you kind of look at this and you take a very, sort of tactical look and say, okay, Where could we do better? Where could we make improvements? You at some point, maybe you just kind of accept this idea that homebrewing is just not as popular as it used to be. So how can we be successful in this new dynamic? But you know, so I've been thinking about this a lot, and then I went to HomebrewCon this past, June, Charlie Papazian gave the keynote speech, and we went, me and a lot of my colleagues from BSG and some other folks. And, you know, he started it by talking about why and how they got into making homebrew in the first place. You know, how the AHA came to be formed, how GABF came to be formed, and eventually the Brewers Association. And really at the heart of the genesis of this is he said they were just trying to have fun. They thought it would be fun to make their own beer, you know, and partly driven by, you know, a lot of these people had traveled overseas, experienced, you know, Belgian beers or, you know, beers in the UK, and then came back to these states and realized they couldn't get those styles of beers. But he said it was really about fun. That was the primary reason, you know, and in doing that and bringing that approach, he brought more and more people into this idea of homebrewing. He started teaching a class and people would come in, and it was about having fun. And he said along the way, they learned how to do it better, but that wasn't necessarily the reason why they were doing it. They learned how to make better beer just sort of in the process because they were focused on having fun. And it just dawned on me. I mean, the light went off and I said, God, this is what we've lost track of. We've been trying to sell homebrewing on, you know, the latest, greatest piece of equipment and the best ingredients and the best recipe and, you know, make the very best beer at home, make a craft beer equivalent. And we kind of lost touch with the message of you should do it because it's fun. First and foremost, that's why you should do this. And it just seems so obvious. And I feel kind of, you know, so like, oh duh. You know, it's a hobby. If it's not fun, no one wants to do an unfun hobby. Yeah. So, you know, and so I think that was kind of the message I came away with. And all my team members on BSG, we all came away from that talk with the same thing. We were like, wow, we're coming at this, you know, all wrong. We need to focus on making homebrewing fun again. And, you know, from our standpoint, maybe that's not as direct in its impact on the industry and community and homebrewers themselves, but certainly retailers, that's the message that I try to send now, is like, we need to work with you, or you need to work with your community to make homebrewing fun. Because if you're not making homebrewing fun, no one's going to come in the door. There's no amount of cool gadgets or, you know, equipment or variety of ingredients or love of craft beer that's going to make this person brew beer unless they think it's fun.
That does resonate with me. I started in the late 80s, and at that time we had poor ingredients. We had no knowledge, and most of the time the beer was bad, mm-hmm. but we kept doing it anyways. And you know, so I'm making bad beer, but I kept going. I kept doing it, you know. And it was fun. Part of it was just the fun of doing it, you know, having a big boiling pot and having a couple of buddies over to make beer, you know.
Absolutely. I think of my fondest homebrew memories, and they all include other people, some of my best friends, and they all have some experience. They the beers that we made were, you know, had some special meaning. Maybe we were taking them on a fishing trip, or we shared it with each other. You know, or it marked some sort of anniversary, but you know, that was the thing that drove me, at least, to get into the hobby. And so I don't know how that'll translate out through the industry, but that's definitely going to be the way that I couch it now. That's definitely how I'm going to approach it. And, you know, BSG, obviously we're looking at ways to, how can we inject that? How can we work that into, how we, you know, sell our ingredients or, you know, pitch our wares or engage in the homebrew community itself. You know, we got to make sure that we're helping homebrewing look appealing. And that's what's going to bring more people into this hobby. And it's going to be the thing that, keeps existing homebrewers sticking with it, you know, over time.
Right. Exactly. Well, do you have any other thoughts on that particular topic? I just wanted to give you a chance, one more chance to talk here.
Yeah, I'll leave you with this. There was a saying that we used to have my former job, and a guy I still work with, Michael Dawson, who works at BSG.
And you and Michael, of course, were on Northern Brewer, right? TV.
Northern Brewer and Brewing TV. Yep. And now we work together at BSG. There's kind of a saying that we've always lived by and in the homebrew industry, and that's to focus on the why and not the how. And that's the key areas. You really have to say, why are you homebrewing? That's what you need to add. That's the question you need to ask. The how, people will figure that out. You know, how do you do a decoction mash? You know, read a book, watch a video, you'll figure it out. But why do you want to do a decoction mash? That's the answer you have to.
I have no idea why anybody would want to do a decoction mash, but.
Well, if you can.
That's a lot of pain and suffering there.
If you can answer that question and you can get people jazzed about it, then they'll go figure out how to do it. Right. But if you just talk about the how, then that usually just doesn't fall. It kind of falls flat. Right. So.
Yeah. Okay, Jake. Well, thank you again for coming on the show and talking to us for a little bit about the homebrew industry in general and why you homebrew. Do appreciate it.
Yep. Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
Again, my guest today was Mr. Jake Keeler. He's a former member of the AHA Governing Committee and the BA board, and he also works for BSG. It's great to have you once again, Jake. Thanks again.
Thanks, Brad.
Well, a big thank you to Jake Keeler for joining me this week. Thanks also to our sponsors, Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. They have a new Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine podcast, which I encourage you to check out. It features some of the top craft brewery owners and brewmasters discussing brewing techniques and flavors in beer. It's a podcast for those who make and drink great beer. You can find it on iTunes or at beerandbrewing.com/podcasts. And also Blickman Engineering, creators of the innovative new BrewVision wireless thermometer. Remotely monitor your brewing system from your iPhone or iPad, record data, set alerts, and grab recipes directly from the Beersmith cloud. The BrewVision thermometer, another great innovation from BlickmanEngineering.com. And Beersmith 3 is available now for download on both desktop and mobile platforms. Beersmith 3 adds mead, wine, and cider support, new Whirlpool hop options, brewing for high altitude, and a whole lot more. Check out Beersmith 3 and get your free 21-day trial today from beersmith.com. Thank you for listening. I hope you have a great brewing week.